Welcome to Roguecast, the official podcast of Rogues Gallery on Round Rock, where we talk about games, comics, and other stuff on our pop cultural radar. I'm Randy.
I'm Nick.
This is Dave.
And let's go to the show for this week. This is the Roguecast for Wednesday, February 11th. And gentlemen, we are at two episodes shy of our 50th episode.
T-minus episode 50.
That's right. I don't know just exactly how much special stuff we're going to do, but we definitely will have one cool kind of surprise. Yes. So.
We're going to sing happy birthday at the very least, right?
Yes, of course.
Because yeah, trademark song. Can't we get fined for
that? That's probably true. Right? We're going to sing a version of sitcom version of a happy birthday song that is made up. Yes.
Sure. Dave's going to write the lyrics.
So, as always, start off with a little housekeeping. Our Reading with Rogues, as we record this, we're about to do our Reading with Rogues tonight. So I'll tell you about the next one, which is going to be Tuesday, March 10th over at BJ's Brewhouse. And it will be Astro City, Life in the Big City is what we're going to do.
Yep. An awesome book that is sort of a more serious spin on superheroes, like sort of a very humanistic one.
Yeah, yeah.
It's sort of ground-eye view of superheroes. Yeah.
And then the night prior to that, Monday, March 9th, will be Ladies' Night, which I believe they're doing an Outback Steakhouse again.
Yep, I think it went well last time, or last night.
And then about a week from now, Monday, February 16th, will be our Gaming with Rogues, over also at BJ's Brewhouse. And we'll be doing the cooperative game Pandemic, which will be a lot of fun.
Oh, yeah.
Also, our inventory still continues. This week it is at 45% plus 2d6.
Yep.
So somewhere from 47 to 57% off on a bunch of graphic novels, games, some t-shirts, a bunch of stuff that we're clearing out. So come check that out. And then we'll get to the news. There's been some big news.
Yeah. Lots of announcements.
Do we want to just start with a bombshell and talk from there?
Sure. Like everybody's already, if you're at all a nerdy type friend or person or have friends who are, you've already know this from Facebook.
You're probably already tired of it.
Yep. We're talking about the amazing, Spider-Man is going to be in the Marvel movies.
Yes.
Some of the stuff seems a little vague, like they haven't ironed it all out.
I've seen different versions of different places. Like Marvel.com's announcement is different from the announcement that went out at Hitfix.com and Deadline.com. And I'm not sure if that's Game of Telephone going on or if Marvel.com sort of, you know, if Marvel trimmed it down to what was applicable to them and Deadline has all the movie news, you know.
What I heard was that he was going to appear in, like, is it Cap 3 or –
We don't know. They haven't said which movie.
He was going to appear in one of their movies.
Yes.
And then there may be follow-up movies after that, or it may – like, Sony is still running the Spider-Man movies.
What it sounds like, Amy Pascal, who was the head of Sony until the hackers outed her as being kind of a jerk – now is out at Sony, but has this beautiful production deal where she's producing all kinds of movies for them. So her punishment was an extreme golden parachute.
Nice.
So she is still on board. I hear mixed reports of whether Avi Arad, who's been around Marvel forever,
right,
is still involved. Some people say he is. Some people say he's out. But it sounds like the Spider-Man is still part of the same creative team, like it's a different director.
But we're expecting a new continuity, essentially, for him that will fit the Marvel.
I don't know if we are.
I thought it was, like, confirmed at the very least that Andrew Garfield wouldn't be back.
It is more or less confirmed. It has not been 100%, but it's more or less confirmed that Andrew Garfield is out.
But you have to realize that they also have had their Venom movie in development, the Sinister Six movie in development.
Yeah, there is no saying that means the Amazing Spider-Man 1 and 2 are not in continuity.
Right.
So the odds, and I'd like to hope they weren't. At Hitfix and Deadline, yeah. I believe both of them said that basically it would start with an all new Spider-Man and Marvel Cinematic, and then continue on into Amazing Spider-Man 3.
Right.
So whether that's a way they're parsing it, or whether that's the deal,
Amazing Spider-Man 3 or a third Spider-Man. So,
some have called it Amazing Spider-Man 3.
Huh. I think they should just go on and call it the Spectacular Spider-Man.
They're all right.
Yeah.
And that's
what's interesting is that whatever the case, it sounds like his introduction is not going to be what we would consider a full blown origin story.
No, I bet it's going to be an Easter egg kind of thing. You know, I think he's going to show up a little bit.
I bet he's going to show up a lot.
You think? Because the obvious thing, everybody's talking about him being in Civil War.
Yeah.
Him being the, the Iron Spider and all that kind of stuff. And I think
the problem with that is it doesn't work.
You can't introduce him and then have his identity publicly outed.
If they did him in Civil War, I think he will be a sort of rogue player, among the people who are like, you know, whose side are you on that are caught between it.
Yeah.
He will be an up-and-coming superhero who would be like, who end up being the one who is poised most between the two lines.
Maybe. Keep in mind that in the Civil War comics, Spider-Man's story is a big part of that story.
Yeah, that's a huge part.
Coming out with a public identity and becoming the Iron Spider, that was a huge thing.
I bet they won't touch it at all.
I don't think they will either, but a lot of people seem to be assuming they will.
You know, we already know that the Ultron movie is only sort of tangentially going to be like... I mean, they only took the title Age of Ultron from the storyline. It seems like it's nothing like it.
Yeah.
Now, if the first two movies, they say they're retroactively in Marvel Cinematic Continuity, then it becomes a bigger thing that he could out himself.
And see, that's my worry. I don't want them to retroactively bring in Sony's
Marvel's
Spider-Man.
Marvel's movies have been fantastic for the most part. Sony's movies, rather hit and miss.
I have an extremely mixed reaction to this news because I'm a guy who liked Spider-Man and X-Men being separate. I don't want them coming into the Marvel Cinematic Universe. I like that it forces them to work without them. And I think that this gives them a crutch they don't need.
Well, the only problem I do have is that it's pushback movies that I wanted to see sooner.
Yeah. So it pushed back Black Panther, pushed back Inhumans?
Yeah. And two others, I can't remember what they were.
The weird thing about Inhumans is they're already ramping that up in S.H.I.E.L.D. It seems weird for them to push that.
Yeah. I think it got pushed back to 2018, which is not that far.
But it's still a push. It's
that's
a weird push.
Out.
Yeah. All in all, for me, this is kind of a lose-lose. I didn't really want Sony in Marvel. I didn't really want Spider-Man in Marvel.
It'll definitely be sort of a test of can Marvel, you know, we've already seen that they've handled a lot of the Guardians of the Galaxy was an amazing win that was unlikely. And so if anybody can sort of pull it off, it may well be Marvel's cinematic guys.
Yeah.
But nobody quite knows because Sony is such a wild card.
Sony's still involved, and that makes me nervous.
Yeah, I agree.
Well, it's a test to see if two mega corporations can get along, and if they can't,
there's definitely
then
a first
might
of its
not
kind.
Work.
But what if it takes down the whole Marvel Cinematic Universe?
Yeah, that's the problem I have. That's my worry.
I actually don't think it will. My only fear of, another fear of Spider-Man being involved is that things get pushed back because they want to focus on such a brand name character.
Yeah.
And if they had had this at the start, we wouldn't have gotten Guardians of the Galaxy.
Yeah. That's my biggest issue is I don't
like
want to see...
Like you said, Randy, their focus on other characters has forced them to be a little more creative and innovative.
Yeah.
So we will see.
Not thrilled, but it seems like the general overwhelming response was,
I think what people are taking from it is Marvel Cinematic got Spider-Man.
Yeah.
It's not quite that.
Yeah.
It's not to say that we all sitting here love Spider-Man.
Oh, I love Spider-Man, right. But I'm not sure I want in the Marvel Cinematic Universe.
We love Sony Spider-Man.
Yeah. So, another street-level character, Daredevil, we talked about last week. The teaser had not hit.
Correct. So we got the full
teaser.
So
we saw the teaser, and I like the vibe of it. It doesn't tell you much, and I'm really happy with that.
Well, you got a few scenes that look interesting. General over.
I believe they are clearly going with the black costume Daredevil that we're never going to see the red costume in this season.
I disagree. I think it's going to be a costume evolution over the period of episodes.
I bet if we see it, it's in the last episode.
I wouldn't be shocked.
Show it in the trailer.
No.
Wow. So it's every it's all just.
I've heard some things. I think there's going
to
be some evolution.
I talked to some guys.
But I think it looks great. I loved one of my friends' response of just yelling "stick" in all caps.
Yeah,
it's Scott Glenn, right?
Yeah, and he looks great. He looks the part perfectly. Yeah. It's clearly based very heavily on the John Romita Jr. and Frank Miller Daredevil Man Without Fear.
Yeah,
yeah.
That was sort of a slightly out of continuity.
Yeah.
Origin.
Yeah, it was like based on a movie treatment or something like that.
That book, by the way, does have really gorgeous art.
Does. Yeah. It's a, Al Williamson inked Romita Jr.
And they
might have just been a good fit.
I don't remember who did the colors, but the colors were nice, too. It was a good book. It was a 90s era Daredevil.
I did the colors on that.
Oh, actually. It was you?
Yeah.
Oh, nice.
Yeah.
Nice job.
I keep forgetting to mention it. Thank you.
And the other portion of news...
Randy's clapping if that doesn't come through.
The other portion of news that fits into this piece is that it was revealed today that it is a TVMA rating.
Yeah.
Right. So they're going to be able to swear.
Swear, violence.
Yeah.
Well, TVMA falls in line with what? Justified, Walking Dead.
Pretty much all the shows that we watch.
Breaking Bad.
Yeah.
So, I mean, I expect all those things.
I am mildly cautious of it. Well, the Marvel Cinematic Universe hasn't really embraced that. They've all been PG-13, and this is
There's an article from Cosmic Book News.
Yeah.
TV Mature is described as, this program is specifically designed to be viewed by adults and therefore may be unsuitable for children under 17, contains one or more of the following, crude indecent language, explicit sexual activity, or graphic violence. Puts it on par with shows like Walking Dead, American Horror Story, and Game of Thrones. For comparison, ABC's Agent of S.H.I.E.L.D. and Agent Carter are rated TV-14.
I feel like I like that as Marvel's overall goal, but Daredevil certainly has the tradition of being edgy as far back as the early 80s.
Now, is this possible? And I don't like to think of one of these shows being TVMA because I don't want...
He's just Iron, a foul-mouthed
sailor. I don't want Iron Fist to be TVMA.
And I bet it will be. But it's going to be more like the Kari Andrews stuff.
Probably so, but if that's the case, isn't it the natural progression of things that Netflix is sort of their Marvel Max?
Yeah, I think that may be what they're doing, and unfortunately that doesn't thrill me.
Yeah, it's part of the same universe, but
it'll be edgier stuff. Yeah. It's sort of opening the doors just to give themselves more options for those things. Yeah.
It's certainly not a deal breaker for me or anything. I'm still looking forward to it. But like you, Dave, I think I'd rather they were doing TV-14.
Most of their characters that they're doing for the thing are sort of more street-level characters,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, they are. Daredevil, Power Man, Jessica Jones, and Iron Fist.
Yeah, it's all the street level. It makes sense if they were doing – I'm kind of surprised they didn't throw Punisher in there, to be honest.
I think
he's only a recent acquisition, right?
Yeah,
they may be waiting for him for a season 2 of Netflix stuff.
I actually think it depends on how well Netflix shows do, and then they'll do a second round. Of renew like Daredevil and one of the other ones, and then put Punisher and put Ghost Rider.
I'm sure Punisher will be TV, not movie. Or they've tried multiple times for movie.
Branded as Marvel Knights.
Yeah, something.
Yeah.
So this was a big week for news because DC also had some big news.
I think, DC had a huge group of news.
We've talked about Convergence, their big sort of crossover event that's going to run just 2 months,
right? Which, by the way, if you're a subscriber, help us out a lot by looking at the Convergence stuff. We put a PDF on the Facebook page. They are putting 42-issue series. We have no idea what people are going to want. It's going to be really hard to order. So the more info you can give us up front, the better.
Yeah.
To make sure we have the books you want.
Are we going to be pulling any of these for subs?
We're
going to
do our best. Like, if you're down for Flash, we're going to try and pull the Speed Force one.
Right.
But we don't know who's going to want them, who's not, if you want to try the new stuff. So take a look at what's coming out and let us know. It would help us a lot.
Information will help us and help you.
And help you to make sure we don't sell out.
Right.
Yeah. But after Convergence...
Yeah, we didn't know what the fallout of Convergence
was. It is not a full reboot.
It is not a full reboot. Just like when Marvel did the Secret Wars, Marvel Universe is ending, headlines started. Yeah. This is people being clickbaity.
Yeah.
They're saying things like, DC's New 52 is over. And technically that's true because they're only going to have 48 books.
Well, and they're dropping the New 52
branding. And they're dropping the branding. But 24 of the New 52 books are continuing.
Yeah. Right. And it's like, essentially, it seems like the New 52 continuity is all intact.
Still the same.
They're just sort of like... I think they maybe realize, well, it's been a few years now. It's not exactly new anymore.
Yeah.
I think maybe, editorial...
And they wanted to show a fresh voice.
Yeah, editorial's changing a little bit, and they're loosening the reins on their creators.
They did move out to Burbank, and they've hired Marvel veteran Marie Javins as one of their editors, awesome, and she's great.
What is she responsible for?
She was one of the people at 80s and 90s Marvel.
Okay.
She's a really good editor, and I'm really glad to have her at the helm. That makes me feel a lot better.
But all of this leads up to that we actually have 24 new titles.
24 new titles. So, Robin, Son of Batman, which is by the Batman and Robin's artist Pat Gleason, who's taking over as writer as well. New Black Canary book, sort of by the writer, one of the writers of Batgirl, that is sort of a spinoff from the,
Annie Wu
is on art.
Yep.
They're doing another Martian Manhunter book, which kind of surprises me.
I saw that. That was very surprised.
Coming off of Grayson, they're doing a Midnighter book.
Yep.
They're doing a Batmite book.
Yeah.
Who's doing the Batmite book?
Dan Jurgens is writing, and Corin Howell, an artist I don't know, but whose stuff looks really good.
Interesting.
He's doing the art. There's a new book called Earth 2 Society.
Okay.
Which is, I'm going to guess they're going to go ahead and do Justice Society, maybe traditional.
Probably so. They're getting rid of Earth 2.
They also said there's a new Batman Beyond book.
Yep.
Which is going to be.
Are they getting rid of Earth 2?
I believe so.
Well, it's destroyed in Earth 2 Future's End, isn't it?
I think
this is a new Earth 2.
Yeah.
Okay.
I'm guessing. I don't know. The new Batman Beyond book is not.
It's not Terry.
It's Dan Jurgens writing, Bernard Chang on art. New Cyborg book by the guy who's writing that Shaft book we all like.
Yeah. I'm excited for that.
Me too.
I like Cyborg.
Ivan Reis on art.
I know. That's a powerhouse.
Something called Dark Universe, which is by James Tynion IV, who you might know from The Woods.
That's replacing Justice League Dark.
And is artist Ming Doyle.
Yep.
Doomed by Scott Lobdell and Javier Fernandez, which seems to be a young Doomsday book.
That's an odd call, but
I wouldn't call it Kid Doomsday.
There's a new Harley Quinn Power Girl team up book by the Harley Quinn team, basically.
Yeah,
who are also doing.
They're also doing a book about Starfire.
That's actually one of the ones I'm more interested in. I like the cover art from...
It's Amanda Connor cover. Yeah.
So well, she's probably going to do covers again and then co-write it with her
husband. She's co-writing,
Also redesign the costume a little bit.
Yeah.
It made looked her like more... she was more in line with the Teen Titans Go.
An older version of the Teen Titans Go.
Yeah.
But she does look like me sort of the more fun and not the slutty version we've had for a while.
Yes.
Red Hood and Arsenal will continue on without Starfire in a new book by Scott Lobdell. So if you're liking Red Hood and the Outlaws, it'll continue. Just not Outlaws, it's Red Hood and Arsenal now. We Are Robin by writer Lieber Mayo, which is weird. He's the guy who's done the art on Luther and Joker.
Yeah, he's an interesting call, but he's got a new Vertigo series starting up.
Suiciders.
So.
And then new Justice League of America written and drawn by Brian Hitch, which, okay.
Yeah.
A bizarro book.
You know, Hitch, by the way, you know, just given his work on Ultimates... he's obviously untested as a writer, so who knows on that one. I imagine the art is going to be fairly impressive. He has drawn the Justice League before.
And he's not entirely untested. He's did that Image book Real Heroes. So he's done some stuff.
The Bizarro and the Batmite, that's got to be more of an all-ages some fun comedy type.
It
has to be.
They're also doing Prez. Remember the youngest president of the United States, an old weird DC
weird
Presents
concept
that
I think showed up like in Sandman.
Yeah.
You know, like... A lot of writers who like DC's quirkier stuff tend to be drawn to the character.
There's a its artist is Ben Caldwell, who does sort of an animation style. He did some of the Wednesday Comics stuff.
Yeah, Wednesday Comics.
A new Omega Men book by Tom King, who's one of the guys writing Convergence. He's one of the guys who did he created White Collar, I think.
Yeah, he did.
So that's a weird one. Omega Men is one of their space team. It's like a ragtag. It's their Guardians book. I'm sure
they showed up in Adam Strange and all that stuff.
I liked them years ago.
I'm sure that is their Guardians of the Galaxy book. Mystic You, which is by Lisa Quitney, who's a Vertigo editor and writer. And it's going to star Tim Hunter, their Harry Potter-esque character. Yeah.
I was surprised to see him return, and that's kind of cool. I liked Books of Magic.
How are they going to do that nowadays and avoid the Harry Potter comparison?
I don't know. They may just just roll with it.
Unwritten.
They may just need to change
Unwritten
his
is
look.
A full-on, like...
Harry Potter nod,
Harry Potter nod.
Right, but this is like a character... This is... I mean, Unwritten was actually about, like, being a Harry Potter
book. But, I mean, that first Neil Gaiman Books of Magic, he didn't sound like Harry Potter or anything.
No, no. I mean, it preceded Harry Potter.
Yeah, yeah.
But the phenomenon is so big now that they're going to have to like explain it every time.
It's just the look. I mean, the character is nothing like him.
He might be an older.
We'll see. I'm betting they change his look.
Maybe so.
I'm betting his.
Yeah. I'm going to suggest an eye patch.
What if they make him a? Maybe he should be a scrawny redhead, and they could compare him to Ron Weasley.
Such a Ron Weasley.
Dr. Fate book by Paul Levitz and under Sonny Liu, who I love Sonny Liu's art. Section 8, speaking of unexpected returns.
Spinoff of
Hitman from the 90s. Yep.
Garth Ennis is back.
Garth Ennis writing, John McCray on art.
Section 8 was his crazy superhero team of losers and misfits, which included such characters as Dog Welder,
who welds things welds dogs to things.
He carried around dead dogs that he welded to people. Right.
And Defenestrator, who throws people through a window that he carries around.
Yep.
Shakes, who I believe just Shakes.
Yeah.
Friendly Fire, who shoots everybody on his own team.
And I don't know if we even want to say what Bueno Excellente
is. He fights crime with the power of perversion.
Yeah. If you want to Google that, not the power of perversion, but Bueno Excellente, good luck.
Do not Google power of perversion.
We do not endorse it.
Well, it's kind of funny because, you know, Garth Ennis is sort of back at both of the big two because he's doing a lot for Secret Wars, too.
Is he?
He's got two books coming out for Secret Wars.
I didn't know that.
So he's back to
one of them is like a war type book of some sort.
Yeah.
And finally, Green Lantern Lost Army by Cullen Bunn with art by Jesus Saez. And that's probably the Green Lantern Corps, Green Lantern New Guardians spinoff book.
Lost Army was a storyline that they had just in the last year or two, right?
Was it? I don't know.
I think it was. I thought there was actually already a trade called Green Lantern and the Lost Army or something like that.
I don't think so. Well, there's something with the Army.
I think it was.
Okay. Well, we don't know.
Well, it was like third.
We'll look it up later and you can apologize.
All right. One of us can. They're doing Justice League 3001, continuing the Justice League 3000.
Yeah. Yep.
And then Constantine the Hellblazer, a new book written by Ming Doyle and art with Rolly Rosmo from Image.
I loved his work on, what was the Sasquatch?
Proof.
And he's done a lot
Image. Some good stuff for Image. So that's a rundown. You can find the stuff over at Newsarama. They'll have
But also there's some other creators taking over some of their main books as well. Like I can never pronounce his name.
Jean-Lin Wang.
Yeah, who's done Avatar, but also did what? American-born Chinese?
Yeah, he's done a lot of really good indie books for Top Shelf and for Second. But he's been writing all the Avatar The Last Airbender stuff. It's really good.
And he's taking over, is it
Superman? He's taking over Superman with John Romita Jr. on art.
I'm really curious to see his take on Superman. I think it'll be very interesting.
Jeff Johns' thing didn't quite click for me, so I'd like to see if somebody else can kind of pull it out.
Yeah.
And like we mentioned earlier, this is all going to be apparently coupled with a little bit less editorial restraint, a little more freeing up of the writers to try some different stuff.
A little more of what they've been doing in the Bat Universe, Batgirl, Gotham Academy, sort of a... Yeah.
Expanding upon sort of the...
Letting the creators go a little... Taking the shackles off the creators a little bit.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Which is always a good thing.
Which is a good idea.
Yeah.
Also, this will all be in their Free Comic Book Day offering, Divergence.
Yep.
Which is going to have the first 8 pages of the new Batman story, the Superman that with Jean-Lin Wang and Romita, and then Justice League, the new Darkseid War story.
I've heard there's a big change-up coming in Batman, too. Just story-wise. Yeah.
Well, it seems like they're leading that way with their new story.
Yeah.
So... So, yeah, that is...
I think it's a big... I'm really looking forward to a lot of this stuff.
Yeah, me too.
I'm
curious to see how that pans out.
What we noticed is that, interestingly, you know, Marvel and DC reboot or, you know, retool their stuff all the time. Every couple of years, there's some major new initiative. It's kind of unusual to have them both hitting at almost the exact same time.
Yeah, it's weird.
It's a little scary. It's going to make our ordering weird. The DC Convergence stuff,
I mean, that's
another one where... Please let us know what you want.
Yeah, I was going to say, if you guys see any of these solicits and you're like, oh, I want to try that, let us know so we can sort of order accordingly.
It will really help us gauge interest.
Because we're going to definitely order heavily on some of the new ones.
I wouldn't say definitely.
Okay.
We have to order 24 new books. We're going to be a little cautious.
I know.
Yeah,
but
some of them, yeah.
So what I would say is if you want something, even if you're sure we're going to order it, tell us you want it, because we're going to sell out of some of this stuff, I know.
Yep.
Because we can't possibly order heavily on all 24.
Right. This is one of those things where, unfortunately, we want to offer as strong a service as we can, but we've
got to be careful.
We can't bankrupt ourselves in guessing high on every one of these books.
Yep. There's also a new book from Marvel called A-Force, which, before we get into what it is, that is a terrible title. That is a terrible, terrible title.
I have a feeling... It'll change.
You know, the fact that people, when they need to sidestep cursing, just use the word a-hole?
Yeah.
I'm just saying.
Yeah.
That's how... anyway, so let's talk about that. But, however, the content of the book sounds interesting.
So, A-Force forms in one of the Battle World Zones, the feminist paradise of Arcadia, which I didn't see. That's a... an emerging threat force. Oh, so that's why, Dave, you're wondering why all the female characters. It's the Arcadia is apparently the feminist paradise. It's like the all the female characters type thing.
Is that like an old concept?
No, I think it's new.
Yeah. Oh, okay.
Forces an all female group of heroes to form a new Avengers team, including among them a new character called Singularity, who represents a pocket universe that gained sentience during the multiversal collapse. Why did Grant Morrison write this?
I know, right? Pocket universe, sentience.
So the cover features a huge number of heroes: She-Hulk, Medusa, Dazzler, Storm, Rogue, Wasp, Captain Marvel, Spider-Woman, Phoenix, Scarlet Witch, Nico from Runaways, Elektra.
Spider-Gwen.
Any female character you can name is on this cover.
Except for Miss Marvel. Right.
Now, we don't necessarily know that they're going to like all be there like at once, but it seems like their pool of possible characters is going to be vast.
Yeah. So, I believe G. Willow Wilson is writing?
Yeah. I think that's right. Who has recently impressed everybody with Miss Marvel.
Yep. And is writing X-Men. She needs to be careful. She's going to get pigeonholed as the women writer.
Right.
She needs to write something that is not all women.
Probably so, although you could do worse than
there are worse things to be.
She's a good writer, you know, so if she's drawn to those characters, you know, I'm down with it.
So, yeah, hopefully A-Force is a working title and they're going to change it because that is a terrible name.
I think it's probably called Avengers Force. Something like that.
I hope so. That's not much better, but it's better.
Don't you remember Forceworks?
Yes. It was a terrible title, too. Honestly, Force is probably not a name you want. Even X-Force. X-Force works, but it has unfortunate 90s connotations. I would leave Force on the cutting room floor. Change the name. I don't know what the name is.
Actually, you know, here's the thing. It sounds kind of stupid to me. I wouldn't be surprised if after, like, a few months of reading it, it just becomes It would just become a normal name.
Maybe so.
It'll sort of lose its initial meaning to us and just become, oh, that's what they call. They're called.
At any rate, I like the notion of Willow Wilson writing a bunch of Marvel women as a team. I think that's going to be fun.
Who's drawing it?
No, the cover art is by Jim Chung.
Right.
If Jim Chung did it, that would be awesome.
That'd be amazing, but I don't think it is. It's probably somebody else. Maybe somebody new. There's a lot of new creators popping up. So looking forward to that. Netflix announced another one, by the way. They announced The Legend of Zelda.
Oh, yeah. It's breaking from comics here.
Yeah.
This is pretty big. You know, it's Legend of Zelda is a weirdly under – and like the Mario games.
Yeah.
These are huge licenses that there are not a lot of comics and merchandise for, you know, outside
Zelda's
of like stuffed
got a few
animals.
Things.
Right. It's a few things, but it's not as much as you might think for such a mega franchise. I mean, people – on my Facebook feed, I see like fan art all the time, and you know it's like, you know, here's the you know the Legend of Zelda characters at Punk Rockers or whatever. You know, it's like they inspire a lot of creativity in fans. So I'm surprised they haven't done something like this. It is a little weird that the lead hero Link, of course, in the games is known. He's a cipher. He's mute.
Yep.
The story happens around him, but he doesn't talk. So they're going to obviously change that.
Yeah, it's funny. I've seen everybody say, well, is he going to talk? And I'm like, of course he's going to talk.
Yeah.
He's going to be a mute.
It'd be interesting.
I think, you know, it's a little weird, but with Netflix behind it, I think they're probably going to be able to pull this off.
Yeah, I think it'll be cool.
Yeah. So jumping back to comics a little bit, there was a new announcement from Marvel, and this is a little bit inside baseball, but I think it's interesting and sort of speaks to the increasing attempts to get women into comics. But Marvel has announced, and I'm going to butcher her name, that Sana Aminat, who is a Marvel editor and apparently the co-creator of Ms. Marvel, Kamala Khan.
How do you spell her name?
S-A-N-A-A-M-A-N-A-T.
Okay. I think you did a good job.
So she has become Marvel's director of content and character development.
When you mentioned this to me earlier, Randy, I said Marvel has a director of content.
It's a new thing. I don't think they've had this before, and I think that basically it puts they're putting the focus on someone who created one of their more dynamic new characters and saying, "Hey, bring us more of this."
Right. I also would like to think that it's somebody who's going to kind of like oversee a little bit and make sure that they don't take a character and like step outside the bounds of what their personality is. Like,
yeah.
So somebody's not going to take Kamala and say, she's going to be our sexy new character.
Right.
Now.
Right. Like that's not her thing.
She's
about.
I think this is a good position to have at Marvel.
Yeah, I agree. I think it's good. Also, we should divert a little bit, to say, I think we mentioned Staples coming up.
Yes.
We are about 2 or 3 weeks out. Actually, it is the first Saturday and Sunday in March.
Yep.
We are, as always, co-sponsoring. We're bringing in one of the creators. And Dave did an interview for them for their website.
Yes.
Staple-Austin.org.
Yep. Is that what the blog is?
Yeah.
The
blog is there, yeah.
Okay, cool. Yeah, Chris Nicholas, the founder of it. Uncle Staple, yep. He's been running it from the beginning and doing an amazing job. He's a tireless organizer. But they were not able to get their regular interviewer out, and so I volunteered to do it since I kind of like that stuff and did a little email interview with Jess Fink.
Yep, who's one of the guests who did Chester 5000.
And We Can Fix It.
We Can Fix It.
And her stuff is amazing. She does her autobiographical comics. She's got her naughty comics.
Yep.
She's done a bunch of T-shirt designs. And even though, you know, this was just like a real short interview, but I was pretty happy with how it came out.
Yeah, it was a quick little interview. It was a good interview, though. I thought it turned out really well.
So, check that out, and I may have another one in the pipeline. Yeah. So just keep your eyes peeled, and obviously check out the Staple blog. They've been putting up several interviews. I didn't do all of them, but there's like...
Right.
They just put up one with Kate Leth.
Yeah,
Who does the Edward Scissorhands comics and what, Adventure Time.
Adventure Time, and is the founder of the Valkyries.
Yeah, a bunch of stuff.
So we'll put a link to that in the write up for the podcast. One last bit of news: Lego fans may have seen they are officially doing Doctor Who Legos.
Yeah, pretty awesome.
Or at least one set.
At least one set.
Yeah,
and
I believe it's one of those the fans voted and they listened.
Yeah, and also Wally Legos.
Yay! That's the one I'm really excited because I want to build Wally.
Can you get a life size Wally and a life size Eva?
I'm sure somebody out there has made a life-size Wally and Eva.
I want a life-size Wally that actually rolls.
You know, if the Doctor Who fandom is pretty strong right now, I can't see this stopping with one set.
No.
You know, they're going to do like a TARDIS that unfolds or something like that, and they'll have like a Doctor and a companion. But you know people are going to want Dalek.
Yeah. Well, from what I hear, this set is going to include sort of the, like, a smorgasbord of all the fun stuff.
Okay, well, that's good.
It's going to have the TARDIS, a couple of the Doctors, I know a Dalek.
If you cover Daleks, Weeping Angels, and the TARDIS, you get a lot.
That's true, and if they did minifigs of, like, the other Doctors and Companions...
It'll probably be a big set.
Right, but I was going to say, like, you could still follow it up with some stuff, but yeah, that would cover a decent chunk.
Yeah.
Actually, you know what's cool about that is because he time travels... And they've got medieval sets, they've got space sets, they've got modern-day sets.
Legos.
You could intersect that one with any given set.
That'd be a great Twitter, Instagram hashtag kind of thing if you did a Doctor Who and Doctor in Lego. Yeah. Actually, they really should make a Doctor Who Lego game, like a video game.
Right.
Well, we're going to get a Jurassic Park Lego game.
I know, Jurassic World. I saw that.
I was talking about that with my brother the other day, and he was... suggesting that what will make this game, if they do it, is if you can control the dinosaurs.
I'm sure you'll be able to.
And I'm sure you will, too.
It'd be crazy not to.
The little teaser's pretty fun.
Yeah, the teaser was fun. If you haven't seen it, just look up the teaser for, what is it, Jurassic World?
Jurassic World. All right, so that is our overstuffed news and talkie segment for this week. And we'll be back in just a few seconds with our comics talk for the week. I ran my mouth off a bit too much, or what did I say? Well, you just laughed it off, it was all okay. We are talking comics for the week of Wednesday, February 11th, and before we do that, a new feature.
Right.
Multimedia.
Yeah, we're
coming at you.
We're jumping into Instagram.
Yes.
We've actually been doing it for like the last week or so.
Our username is RoguesGalleryTX, as it is almost everywhere.
Yeah. And at least one thing that we'll be doing each week is posting a little preview of the books we're going to be talking about in the Roguecast, which you're listening to now. So by the time you hear this, it'll already have gone up. But it'll be a little teaser of some of the cool books coming out.
That's right. If you look on Tuesday, you will see it. It is a hashtag Roguecast.
Yeah.
If you don't see it, it means you should email us and yell furiously at us, where's my Roguecast picture?
Because this is just something we...
Or just come to the store and punch Randy.
Yeah, punch Randy.
Wait, what?
When we pull books on Tuesdays, inevitably we flip through them, and there's almost always some entertaining, weird, random panel that's just like, oh, wow, taken out of context, this would be hilarious or bizarre. So we are going to be doing that every Tuesday, too, the out-of-context panel of the week. It'll go up on the store's Instagram, so, go check out our Instagram.
Yeah, and again, if that doesn't pop up, it means we forgot, so you should come to the store and punch Randy.
Right, definitely.
Wait, what?
I thought you were going to say Dave.
I was out of control of my own
reverse psychology. It was a rabbit season, duck season kind of thing.
And it worked out just like it did for Daffy Duck.
Not well.
So, we're going to start off with, we're not going to go to the main event this week. We'll save that for the next talk, but... I'm going to talk about the book that I read this week that I liked, which is called The Empty, which is a book that is in somebody else's stack.
Yeah,
there we go. So this is Jimmy Robinson's book. Jimmy Robinson is a guy who's done – he's a writer-artist and does a bunch of stuff in Image. His last thing was Five Weapons. That was sort of the school about – the school for assassins where everyone had different skills, blade, bow.
That's not the Reminder one.
Nope. That's Deadly Class. That's more serious. And then before that, he did a book called Bomb Queen that was just really weird exploitational book.
Yeah.
And before that, he did a bunch of indie stuff, one called like Code Blue that was about a future medic. He does a lot of different concepts. He's a writer-artist, and his art always looks a little bit different. And the art here is really gorgeous.
Is it basically a fantasy book, Randy?
It's sort of, post-apocalyptic fantasy.
Yeah.
And it is. It takes place in this world where it's sort of a desert. There are these veins of gaseous pipelines that are poisoning everything and poisoning the food. And the main character is this female hunter with sort of these weird elongated arms. And she finds a woman washed up who has this big long neck and short arms, who seems to come from another part of the world they didn't know existed, and that part of the world is, like, green and has food and all that kind of stuff. And so she's, like, trying to get this woman to help her restore her people.
That's interesting. So it sort of looks like, say, I don't want to say, like, kind of quite an eco-apocalypse, but it sounds like
it's something like it.
At least sort of in some way about that.
Yeah.
And yet has some fantasy tropes in it. I saw weird creatures.
Yeah.
I saw a giant porcupine-looking thing.
I would say it's Miyazaki. You know how Miyazaki likes to do these sort of environmental fable type stuff. Definitely in the sort of the Spirited Away vein, where mankind is really destroyed, or nature is fighting back.
That's money, okay.
Yeah. What did I say? Spirited Away?
You did.
Mononoke. That's what I meant.
As you said, Spirited Away didn't really.
No, Mononoke. But it's got gorgeous art, really interesting so far, and seems to be sort of a mixture of sort of world building and adventure.
I like the colors.
And the colors are really nice. The art is just really, really good.
Yeah, I was very impressed flipping through it. It's definitely one I'm reading tonight.
It's got a very striking cover. You will see it on the shelf. Again, called The Empty, which is their name for, I believe, the desert where there's nothing grows.
That would make sense.
All right, so that's the book that I really liked. Let's get on to the book that everybody wants to know about this week.
Oh, that book.
Which is Darth Vader.
Right. That is my particular pick of the week.
You have to speak like Darth Vader.
Okay. I will speak in a muffled way that the audience cannot hear. So yes, this is the second offering from Marvel's Star Wars line. I will say that one of the first things that grabbed me is the way they're doing the titling in all of these. Every one of them begins with an all-black page that just has the long time ago in a galaxy far, far away. Then there's a double-page splash of the title.
Yep.
And I loved
the... And then the crawl. Oh, the crawl from the point of view of the Empire?
The crawl is from the point of view of the Empire. So I'm just going to... Just the opening.
Sure.
It is a period of insurgents. Rebel spaceships striking from a hidden base on a moon of Yavin have won a shocking surprise victory against the rightful reign of the Galactic Empire.
It's great. Yeah.
And so it immediately got off on a strong foot.
And immediately tells you what this book is. Like, this is the Empire point of view book.
Yep. Can we say...
Oh, it's only a couple pages in. You can tell. This isn't a spoiler.
Vader has a very interesting face-off with Jabba the Hutt. It's very much in sort of the crux of the story. And you know when Luke went into Jabba the Hutt's palace?
Yeah.
And he kind of all ninja Jedi'd past people and, you know, choked out one of the guards and stuff. And you're like, man, Luke is kind of edgy. Okay, Darth Vader is a little edgier than that.
Yeah, this is... But it's a visual. They definitely... They homage it. Just like the Star Wars book sort of visually homaged the Star Wars movie, this one, it is a visual homage. There's a lot of parallels to the beginning of Return of the Jedi.
Some of the LaRocca's art is so good. Just beautiful.
Yeah. Salvador LaRocca, if you've not seen his art, is a guy who's a... I would say that he probably uses strong photo reference.
Yeah.
But he has found a way to integrate it in a far superior way than other artists who I think of as photo reference-y guys.
Yeah.
It's like he's brought a sort of a style overlay that makes it...
This page, I mean, the one you can't see, but Dave has opened a page where there's a lot of little panels where Vader is talking to Jabba, and I love the different angles that he uses.
Yeah,
the camera angles are so vast on that page.
It keeps moving, so it's a conversation, but it doesn't feel static.
Right.
Yeah.
And I think that's such a useful tool.
Of a counterpoint to sort of how Bendis tends to do, which is... Close-up of a face, close-up of a face, close-up of a face.
But it's always of the same thing. These are close-up of faces, but they're, you know, told from, you know, behind them or
right. Well, it's also, like, there's an overhead shot here. Yeah. They draw some attention to Vader's feet because, of course,
he's standing.
There's the trapdoor we know is there from Return of the Jedi.
Yeah. They're using a lot of shortcuts here of the, if you've seen the movies, you'll get it. And I thought... That was really good conservation of storytelling.
It feeds into sort of this all-encompassing feel that this is Star Wars.
Yeah, it really does. This feels more Star Wars than Dark Horse did. And I love the Dark Horse books.
Right. Dark Horse had sort of the vibe of the somewhat more sophisticated expanded universe stuff.
Yeah,
And this is more of the high action and adventure of the movies.
Yeah. Yeah.
Although the premise here is actually something that was somewhat explored in Brian Wood's storyline, which is that Vader, after the loss of the Death Star, is on the outs with the Emperor.
Right, he failed.
And that was like their big super destructive weapon. It'd be as if the Manhattan Project had gotten taken down by a single, or like were blamed, didn't come through. And it was all one guy had to take
a flip. Einstein hilariously dropped a glass of water and shorted out the bomb.
Mistake.
Mind bad.
Is that race? We'll move on. Anyway.
But... Yeah.
But there are some interesting developments in here. And, I don't want to say who. No. There's a character from Star Wars who I did not expect to ever see
again. Nope, me neither.
He is not what you call, it was not what you call a main character, but I loved seeing him back.
Also, if you're listening, stop guessing. You're not going to guess it. I promise.
Nope. There are some interesting intrigues between Palpatine and Vader.
Yep. This also crosses directly over with the Star Wars. It doesn't cross over, but it refers to the events in the Star Wars book.
Yeah, and I did not expect them to be so closely tied. But
me neither.
You know, in the same way that, you know, people have gotten used to the Marvel movies being tied in, or, and of course, that comics are very often the superhero books tied into each other.
I think these are all going to be one cohesive vision, and they're all going to fit. Yeah. Princess Leia is somehow going to fit in with all this other stuff.
Yeah, some spinoff of that.
But the other thing is, like, this is, if you want to read a Darth Vader book, you want to read him being kind of a badass, and he is a badass here.
And you thought he was a badass in issue two of Star Wars.
But yeah, he was.
This is him being a super badass.
I wasn't sure about this book, but I really liked it. In fact, I may have liked it a little bit more than the other Star Wars book.
Yeah. I think it's going to deliver on what people want and should definitely be tried out.
Yep. Nick, what about you?
I cheatingly chose an event, not a single issue.
Well, it's not so much cheating. It ends this week. It's a big moment.
And we're talking about the Spider-Verse, or more in fact, Amazing Spider-Man and Spider-Woman this week. And just so you know, read Amazing Spider-Man first.
Yes, that's a crucial bit of info, because they have trained us to read the tie-ins first.
You read the tie-ins first, but not this week.
No, it'll spoil... Spider-Woman will totally spoil the end for you.
Yeah, the finale snuck up on us, too, by the way.
It did.
Until we realized that it was right about to wrap.
But the end of the Spider-Verse, you know, it's all about sticking the landing. I actually think it's an action-packed end.
It is full, all the characters.
If you ever wanted to see some of these characters, you know, do a little bit more. Cut loose action-wise. There's some really, really fun things. And I think Slott gives a really good definition of what Spider-Man is and who he should be at its core.
Yeah.
And I think that is really, really fun. I think I really enjoyed the art. I love Kevin Coley. He's done some great stuff on Spider-Man before. Copiel helps out a little bit on a few pages.
Oh, okay. Well, it's Copiel. Okay.
Just random. I have to say, I have not read it yet, but I was flipping through it, and I see there's an insert in the middle for Spider-Woman number 5, where she gets her new costume.
Yep.
I got to say, it looks really cool in action. I wasn't sure about it when I saw just the standalones online, but it looks good. Mm-hmm. I think it's going
to
be really good.
Well, I mean, more to the point, I think they do stick to landing. I am very happy with this series, so much so that I forget who actually makes the toys, but the people who do Marvel Legends are coming out with a whole different line of Spider-Man figures. And I'm probably going to buy all of them and do it like a Spider-Verse display. who doesn't want a Spider-Man 2099 and all these
Are they doing things? The Inheritors?
I don't know if they'll... I would be shocked if they don't... If they wouldn't do...
That'd be kind of cool.
They would at least do...
Moreland, yeah.
I mean, he makes the most sense. The other book...
Did I see Spider-Ham in there?
Oh, yeah, you did.
Spider-Ham is really...
Spider-Ham plays a key moment, actually.
He does, actually.
Interesting, all right.
And the other book is Spider-Woman, which is... In some ways, sort of an epilogue to Jessica Drew's portion of Spider-Verse.
Yeah.
And it's really, really fun. I think Randy and I would both agree that there's some great lines of dialogue in there.
It's really funny. There's a little bit of meta stuff in there, but it cracked me up.
Dennis Hopeless, he's done some good books.
This is his best book.
This is his best book so far.
By far.
And I actually want to say that the stuff that I found the most entertaining was Jessica Drew and her best friend.
Yeah, which was fun. And that's the tail end of the book. It's the first half is sort of the prologue.
The Spider-Verse stuff.
The first end of the epilogue of Spider-Verse, and the second part is really the prologue to the Spider-Woman book that I think they wanted to do from the outset.
Probably
the one that's got the new costume and all that stuff.
And if this is the vibe that is going to be from going forward, I think it's a great vibe. And I can't wait to see more of it.
Yeah.
I think it's sort of just... It's kind of on just the fun vibe of coolness. So.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to Spider-Woman number 5 because I think it's going to be basically Spider-Woman number 1.
But I've really enjoyed Spider-Woman through Spider-Verse. I think Greg Land has done a great job.
Yeah, I'm surprising because I'm not always a fan of his, but I thought he did a good job here.
He's come back and shown that he can really draw the backgrounds and really kind of sort of step up from what he was. And I really dug Spider-Verse. I will pick it up in whatever version they put it out.
Yeah, well, there's a big giant hardcover coming. And I'm probably going to pick that up.
Yeah, maybe so. I don't know.
The thing is, I don't think the Spider-Woman issues are in there, and I think I'll probably pick that up too because I liked what they do with Spider-Woman. Yeah. The Spider-Verse hardcover.
Kind of needed.
Well, Spider-Verse hardcover has a lot of stuff.
But I mean, this deals with some crucial stuff.
Yeah. Well, we'll see. I don't know. But the Spider-Verse hardcover is a big hardcover that's coming out.
Is there
if you want one,
be two hardcovers.
No, there's only one hardcover. Okay. They're not doing a companion, I don't think. Maybe they will. I don't know. They have before.
Yeah, I was gonna say they did the Spider-Verse hardcover and then they'll do like the Spider-Verse companion.
Well, they did that for AVX. They did that for Original Sin. They definitely have done it. So we'll see. It hasn't been solicited yet, anyway.
Right.
But the hardcover has. What else is on you guys' reading list this week? Mine is relatively small. I'm trying out Valiant's new book, Divinity, because it's a so it's like a completely different book. It's like not a spinoff of their existing characters. It's a new take. It's written by Matt Kent and art by Trevor Harrison. And then, of course, I have the hardcover of Avatar, The Last Airbender, The Rift, which is the third Avatar series to be collected. What else is on your list?
Dave, what do you got?
Let's see. There's a new all-ages book with the awesome title of Help Us, Great Warrior, which definitely seems to have a lot in common with the, you know, the kind of surreal action-adventure of Adventure Time or Bravest Warrior.
But they're also aiming at that Lumberjanes audience.
Right.
It is from the Boombox, their creator-owned imprint.
That main character looks strikingly like Kirby.
Yeah. It's a big, fat Kirby-looking character. That is to say, not Jack Kirby, but Kirby, the video game sphere, right, who eats things.
Oh, is that not the same guy I thought?
It might be the same guy.
Yeah.
But with a cigar.
Oh, okay.
Anyway, I read through that. I really like the art in it. It's a fun and it's very much in that sort of Cartoon Network-y style, I guess I'd say. If you like that style, check it out. There's a new issue of Edward Scissorhands. Astro City hits this week, which is, I believe, the second part to a story I've been really enjoying. And I just read the first few pages, and it was great. So, really looking forward to that. Wild's End maybe
concludes.
Yeah, that's the sort of anthropomorphic War of the Worlds type story.
Right.
And, and we should mention this, right, Randy? Image, is this the first one that they've done?
Yeah, this is the first one they've done.
There's something called Image Firsts Compendium.
It is a big, giant trade.
Yeah.
It has nine issues in it, nine first issues.
And it's some big stuff, like Witches, Southern Bastards, Wicked and Divine, Nailbiter, and all that for just $6.
Yeah.
It's crazy.
It's a great deal if you want to sample some Image books. It's nine really good first issues.
I think a lot of people are going to want to pick this up.
Yeah.
Because Image has been so on fire lately, but sometimes it's like, you know, you might be like, oh, where do I start? You know, there's so many different books. This is essentially the price of just two single issue comics.
You need to sample nine books.
Nine of their strongest titles.
Yeah.
So pretty much as recommended as we can get. For
that is a great deal. Yeah.
Nick, what do you got?
I have the fifth issue of Thor.
Yep.
Jason Aaron's Thor. This one, she fights Absorbing Man.
Okay.
And there's also some other fun action and mystery.
I noticed it was a different artist, but a good artist.
Yeah, it's is it Jorge Molina? Who,
okay.
Yeah, does an amazing work. I think he posted a cover he did.
He did a Miss Marvel. I assume it's an upcoming cover.
Oh yeah.
That was the one that I found. I saw at Comics Alliance, and I posted like on our Facebook and store Instagram. And it's a great piece of Miss Marvel art. So that makes sense. The art looked really good.
I've really enjoyed Thor so far, and still loved this issue. The second issue of Conan Red Sonja, which
you really liked.
I really liked.
Yeah, the first one was your pick.
It was. I mean, Gail Simone, Jim Zub writing Conan and Red Sonja, respectively. It's fun.
And Dan Panosian art.
Yes. The second issue of All New Captain America, Fear Him, which I think when we were podcasting last time, we didn't quite know what it was.
We sort of glossed over. We didn't know what it was.
This is actually Sam Wilson and Nomad versus Scarecrow. Marvel Scarecrow, not DC Scarecrow. And it just sort of goes from there. It's kind of straightforward in a lot of sense, but it's a good action book. It's fun.
Oh, okay.
I really enjoyed the first issue.
Also Dennis Hopeless.
It is Dennis Hopeless. And also the first issue of a new Dresden Files story, which the big thing for this is a story that's never been told before. It's, you know, Jim Butcher actually writing.
It's called Downtown.
Jim Butcher and Mark Powers write.
Which is the same team that did the last one, Warcry, which was also an original story.
Yes. It seems like Butcher, you know, his books come out once a year, but he is definitely trying to, you know, churn out some comic material as well.
That is a guy who is very prolific.
He is. He is. And he loves his role-playing games and comics, so it doesn't surprise me that he's really focusing in on the comic world. And this looks to be about in the same vein as all the others before it, so I'm very excited by it.
Cool. All right, so we will be back in just a few seconds to talk about some TV and movies. Alright, so we're going to talk about some TV and movies that have been going on. Movie trailers, more or less, actually. To start off with the TV, a show that only I have watched, but everyone should. Amazon does these Amazon streaming originals. Like, if you have Amazon Prime, you get free access to their streaming. And they've done a few notable series. Transparent was really good. I've talked about that. But they did their latest pilot branch of pilot season. And one of them is a Philip K. Dick adaptation. His well-known novel, Man in the High Castle, which is a world where basically the Nazis won World War II. And so America is divided mostly into sort of Nazi America, and then the Rocky Mountains are sort of the neutral zone, and then there's a Pacific America that is run by the Japanese.
Oh, interesting.
And it is taking place in the 1960s, so the war's been over for basically a generation. Like
that,
all the,
that is big high-concept stuff for TV.
It is. And it looks values. Gorgeous.
Really?
Yes, it is so beautiful. The Japanese stuff takes place in San Francisco, so they sort of doubled Chinatown. Oh, a little bit. So yeah. It's in Chinatown, but they also sort of add a lot. So they could sort of cheat a little bit and add the Japanese touches.
Oh, that's smart.
And I'm not sure where they shoot all the German stuff. I'm thinking it's a New York-type set. For all I know, this was all shot in Vancouver, but it looks great. And I don't know who most of the cast.
I was going to say, is it a
miniseries?
It's going to be a miniseries. Well, it'll be like Amazon. It'll be ongoing. It'll be, you know, streaming miniseries like House of Cards or one of those.
Right.
So they haven't officially greenlit it yet, but I'm sure it's going to be greenlit.
Adaptation of the strict adaptation of the book, or is it like
it's a modified version? I gather.
Got it.
I've just started reading the book. I've never read the book before. Okay.
But it looks like they're probably running with it as a serial endeavor.
Yes, it opens with two characters, one in the sort of the Japanese area. It's like her sister was involved with the resistance, and another where it's a young guy who gets involved driving some kind of thing for the resistance to Canyon City, Colorado. And there are some twists and turns. They also focus on a Nazi Heergruppmann, something like that, a big like higher up who's sort of a. You know, he's looking into the one who's trying to beat down the resistance. He's very much like Waltz's character from Inglourious Basterds, this hateful but very interesting. Nazi hunter. And it's very, very good. I was very pleased with this first episode. I don't know exactly what the series is going to look like, but I really liked it, and I'm looking forward to seeing more of it.
Well, based on your description of that, I'm going to watch it tonight.
Yeah,
because it sounds awesome.
It's so good.
And I like Philip K. Dick books. So.
Yeah, I've never read this one. I dropped it was on Amazon Kindle for $2.99, so I went ahead and ordered it, and just started reading it. So, but yeah, if you're a fan of Philip K. Dick's adaptations in general, which you've probably seen a ton of them, I have.
Yeah, I think the notable ones for me, I mean, Minority Report.
Minority Report, Blade Runner.
Total Recall.
And I actually liked the recent Adjustment Bureau quite a bit, too.
Yeah, a lot of his stuff has been adapted for movies. But this
with varying, radically varying degrees of faithfulness.
Yes, sure.
Blade Runner, which is a beloved movie, was rather different
from the book. It's not much like the book, yeah. So definitely worth a look. And if you have Amazon streaming, it's free. I mean, other than the cost of the Amazon Prime. Nick, you also watched a new show this week.
I did, and this was actually one my wife found because I'd heard nothing about it.
Yep,
it's called Fresh Off the Boat. It's a 30-minute sitcom comedy.
ABC.
It might air tonight.
I think they're moving it around a little bit. It's going to be Wednesday nights, and it's going to move to a Tuesday night slot.
Right. Check your local listings.
Yes,
but it focuses on a Taiwanese family in the 90s, sort of adapting to American culture. And I'm like, I haven't seen a lot of comedies or shows sort of set in the 90s. You know, kind of
right.
Well, they're using
that as a period.
Yeah,
they've got the Goldbergs. I think is sort of a 90s adjacent.
I haven't watched the Goldbergs, so I don't know. But for me, and this is a little silly, the main guy, Randall Park, who plays the father of this family, I know him because of The Interview.
He plays Kim Jong-un.
And he gives a hilarious performance. His name is Randall Park. I don't know if he's a stand-up.
He's also been in Veep, where he plays the Danny Chung, the other sort of one of her political rivals. He's great.
Okay. I at this point I'll watch anything he's in because he's hilarious.
Yeah,
I need
he's
to watch
the dad, him. Right?
He plays the dad. Most of the and he is sort of operating a steakhouse that he thinks is going to bring so much money to their family, and it's in fact kind of crap.
And it's like a theme steakhouse.
It is
isn't
a theme steakhouse, and you know you get you know his cast of characters at work, but it also really focuses on one of the young sons who sort of. Uses 90s hip-hop rap as sort of his kind of...
That's one of the things I've heard is that the soundtrack is really good.
The soundtrack is great. And it's really, really, the comedy is just great. It's funny. It's relevant.
Liken it somewhat to the Wonder Years.
I could see someone making that comparison.
Yeah, I was just wondering.
Well, it's based on a book. Eddie Huang, I think, is the guy who wrote it, and it's his memoir called Fresh Off the Boat. I think is what it was called.
There's another character in here that I just want to briefly touch on, the mom.
Yes,
Jessica Huang, or her name is Constance. I forget her last name. Constance Wu. My God, is she hilarious. Her jokes killed me the most.
Okay.
I was just bursting out laughing. Really, really highly recommend checking this out. I'm glad. I watched the first two on demand through my television. Yep. So, and I have it set on my DVR for now.
Damn it, Nick. My DVR is bursting right now. And
so is mine. You just gave me a show.
You've just made me want to watch this. Well, yeah, but mine is one episode. this is an ongoing series. But I've heard so much good, and your recommendation, I'm going to have to check this out. And Dave? You don't have to check out anything.
No. Those both sound good.
Although I think you might really like this.
I know you'd like Man in the High Castle. Sound
good. I know humor is sometimes not your cup of tea, but...
Dave doesn't like humor. He's a robot.
Well, no, but some
humor
doesn't kind of...
I like humor, not stupid.
Right. And I think you might enjoy this.
But Dave, you were going to talk about a movie trailer you saw this week.
Right. This is one where I don't know what to make of it. I don't know whether... I know my instinct is I don't know about this.
Yep.
Poltergeist is being remade.
Right.
People may remember Poltergeist from, what was it, 81, 82?
Steven Spielberg movie?
Toby Hooper movie?
Well, we were discussing this, that Spielberg clearly had some influence, even though Toby Hooper
directed.
It's like
a very known thing, and I think, I don't know if it's like a touchy subject, but it is never, they've never, I think, like outright said how much of an involvement Steven Spielberg may have had in directing it, but his fingerprints appears to be all over.
Was he the DP on it or something, or was he producing?
No, I don't know. Okay. I don't know the behind-the-scenes stuff that much, but... It was one of my formative horror movies.
Yeah.
You know? Like, I watched that.
It's a great movie.
I actually watched it within the last, like, 6 months. It holds up completely.
I've seen it in the last year or so, too.
It's been many years for me.
There was a movie that came out recently, a horror movie that was clearly an homage to that, Insidious.
Oh, yeah.
Insidious follows very much the format that Poltergeist did of sort of the slow, eerie buildup of something going on in a house, you know, like a haunting-related thing.
Yeah.
And a second half, which involves actually crossing over into this other world and, like... a direct confrontation with it.
I was actually very impressed with the Insidious.
Yeah, I like Insidious. In fact, I like it. I think I like that better than the idea of a remake because it did stake out some somewhat different territory, even though it was also influenced.
It had a few misfires here and there, but I think overall it was a lot of fun. I haven't seen this trailer for the new Poltergeist. Yeah.
Now, that said, I thought it was a pretty creepy trailer that the weirdest thing about it for me is that it looks so faithful. You saw the clown doll. I saw the tree.
So it's focusing on the family again.
The parapsychologist, I think, who comes to help them is not a little lady like it was in the original Poltergeist. Yeah. I can't remember. It is some notable actor, and I'm forgetting who it was because I watched the trailer a few days ago.
Jennifer Lawrence.
We'll say it's Jennifer Lawrence.
Sure.
It's actually a dude, but
John Lawrence.
Maybe it's Jennifer Lawrence with CG.
Yes, she's a CG man.
It's Jennifer Lawrence in a wig.
Yep.
But anyway, that was the only like major difference I saw. But like the scenes looked very creepy. It is one of those trailers that ends with a few big, you know, glimpses of something going on. You know, like somebody. You know that scene in Rec where she gets pulled away by the creature?
Right. Yeah.
There's like two scenes like that at the end of the trailer, and those always kind of feel like sort of trashy little horror trailer endings.
Yeah.
So that part left a sort of bad taste in my mouth. But overall, even though I can't condone it, it looks like a well-made movie. So I'm... you know who the dad is? It's a guy from... lead character from Moon, Sam Rockwell.
Oh, Sam Rockwell. Okay.
Sam Rockwell is the dad, and so like...
Just gotten my interest a little bit more.
Yeah, no, that's why it's, you know, I'm torn. You know, there's good people in it.
I'm just going to say, is Sam Rockwell going to get to be able to dance?
He will always, almost always.
That's an easy way to bring it in. He's playing like a goofy dad. Of course he can dance. Anyway, so we'll see. But, you know, look it up. Check out the trailer if you are a fan of horror movies.
All right, we're going to take an unprecedented another break. Because when we come back, we're going to have some spoilers, and we want to give everyone a chance to cut off before spoilers. We're going to talk about the last episode of Flash, not the one that's airing tonight. As you've heard, this it aired last night, but last week's Flash. So if you're not current on Flash, We're going to go full on spoilers. Just check out. Come back next week. We'll have a new podcast. But if you have, you're caught up on Flash. We're going to talk about that after the next musical break.
So you can come back from the break for about like 3 or 4 minutes.
Oh, for like 5 minutes. Yeah,
it'll be tops. A real short little thing. All right.
So, spoiler warning for Flash, if you're not caught up, we're about to talk spoilers on Flash.
Yes, we are.
It wasn't like crazy spoilers.
No, but it's something you'd rather not know until you see it.
And it was part of the big finale. But
for example, you might not want, say, former Flash artist Scott Collins to post about it right before you watch the show.
He
did.
You know, Scott's a good guy. I'm sure it was
an accident. He is. It was an accident, but he posted, Grodd! His thing was talking about how good the episode was, and he said, Grodd, and I'm like, damn it, Scott, I would rather not have known. I mean, in fairness, I was waiting until 12:15 to watch because we have a tradition where I watch with Dave and Jarek and they are on Hulu time.
And we sort of real-time message each other and enjoy – just enjoy the thing together. It's like MST3K-ing if they just love the movie.
Well, no, it's a watching group, but we're not in the same physical space.
Yeah. I couldn't think of a good analogy.
Maybe we should set up
– for like – it wasn't like Microsoft, Xbox who did the watch through Netflix.
I think they still have that,
Watch with a group of people.
They do. I think they still have that feature. I never used it, but they have it.
But you're using
We should set up a Skype session where we could all talk. But anyway.
But yes, that is the big one. You know, they have teased Grodd in the series before. Yep. We knew he was like a lab animal.
We knew he was out there. They showed his cage.
Yep, and that was a fun early thing.
And they showed Wells sort of poking at him.
Yep. And this, and I was thinking, oh, he's not going to like Wells at all when he comes back.
No.
And in this one, during the finale, we saw a couple of cops down in the sewer. I forget what they were.
Or utility workers, I think.
Yeah, that's right. And they saw, like, scrawlings on the wall.
Yeah, and he's writing Grodd.
Right. So he, like, maybe that was how he learned to write by writing his name or something. And I was like, oh, that's pretty cool. That's a pretty neat thing to end the episode on.
And then.
And I was like, there's no way we're going to actually see him. And then you see him. He's in shadows.
Yeah.
But it's Grodd, and he kills the hell out of him, apparently.
Yeah.
I was freaking so, out. I had no idea it was coming, so it was very nice. Randy, you told me you'd been spoiled on something, and I thought you just meant the basic villain.
Yeah, that's why I didn't say what I'd been spoiled on.
And so I appreciate that, because I got the full impact.
Yeah, I did not, but it was still
cool.
This
episode had more than just Grodd.
Oh, yeah.
It was a really, you know, character-driven episode, I thought, with the stuff with his dad.
The stuff with his dad has always been good, and I love that his dad is a smart guy. He picks up on it instantly that he's the Flash.
And John Wesley Shipp is just
there's
fun.
If you watched it, there's that scene at the end when, Barry is clearly trying to cover up that he's the Flash, but his dad has seen through it and just starts saying, he's like, well...
If my son was the Flash.
If my son was the Flash, here's what I'd tell him. Yeah. And it's a really touching scene.
Yeah. Also, they brought in Iris West. No, not Iris West. Linda Park.
Linda Park, yeah.
Which we thought was a cool kind of fake out that they've sort of incorporated a little bit of young Wally West into their Barry, but clearly they're really going to incorporate it if he's going to be dating Linda Park.
Well, we've talked about the fact that he kind of has clearly grown up with a crush on Iris, even though she's with another guy. And
she's his half sister.
Also his half sister, and they don't have a lot of chemistry.
No.
Like, I buy the crush thing.
Yeah.
They're the beautiful actress, and.
And I like her. I think she's good.
Yeah, she is, but it's just like they don't seem to have a connection. It feels like an actual, just kind of unrequited crush.
Yeah.
And so it would make, you know, Linda, or honestly, also in this episode, Caitlin.
They did some great stuff with Caitlin in this episode.
They go out, she decides to let her hair down a little bit, and they go out for drinks and karaoke. Yep.
By the way, Grant Gustin can sing.
Well, so he was on Glee, right?
Yeah, he was on Glee.
Oh, okay.
So this was kind of an inside joke for that, but it was just, it just works as a character bit, too.
I was joking with Dave, I wanted him to voice modulate, so.
Auto-tune, self-auto-tune.
Yeah, that'd be awesome. They do, like, a super Barry White voice.
They also did more of Piper and Sisko, which I thought was kind of cool. Yep. I liked that Sisko was smart enough to outwit Piper, and then Piper was smart enough to outwit him. Yep,
and they had a cool geek fight. It was actually kind of
brutal.
Geek
fight, yeah.
And of course, central to the episode is a fairly forgettable, honestly, one or two off character that Geoff Johns created.
Peekaboo,
who I liked in this.
They did a much better job with her in the TV show.
But they kind of go ahead. Nick.
The visual effects for her and her power,
yeah,
kind of had Nightcrawlerish teleporting.
Yeah, yeah.
But when she was like tangling with the Flash, she was kind of using it in cool ways to fight him, and he just couldn't keep up. And one of the things she did, I thought was a really neat tactic, is she at one point she like grabbed some she knocked a construction worker off the side of a building, so he had to go and like save the guy, and that allowed her time to get away. Yep. She was just kind of using it very cleverly and insidiously.
Yeah,
I like that she was using a spyglass to spot
to see where she was going.
She had to see where she was going to teleport.
Yeah, it was fun.
And they ran something with her, which was a bit of a Harley Quinn thing, where she was infatuated with a sort of a bad guy, a criminal guy, who clearly cared more about himself than her, but she couldn't give him up, basically.
Yeah, yeah.
And I don't even remember if that was her thing in the comic at all.
I don't either. I don't remember the comic character very well. But
you know, as far as, like, I mean, she was an amazing villain, but if you're just going to, like, have kind of a villain to hang a lot of other stuff on in the story, it was a good storyline.
Yeah. They also were doing a lot more digging into Firestorm. That's what the Pied Piper stuff was.
Yeah.
And I'm liking all of it.
Yeah, me too. I'm looking forward to them. More Firestorm, more Grodd. Mm-hmm.
Honestly, when I found out who the villainess was in the episode, I was like, I'm sure it'll be okay, but I wasn't really looking forward to it. And instead, there were like 5 or 6 great scenes in it.
This was probably the best episode back since the mid-season break, I think.
Yep.
And I haven't had a problem with any of the episodes yet, so.
Randy, you said at the beginning, he rescues a woman from a car, is it right?
Yeah, yeah.
And you said, and you messaged that, you know, you're like, you'll never get tired of Flash rescuing people.
Yeah.
And you were right, it was a great scene.
Yeah.
He like uses like his like vibration thing with his hands
to unlock the door
to like make the door pop or whatever and wrench it off.
And then when he saves the guy says, "Thanks, Flash."
Yeah,
I thought it was cool.
Classic hero moment.
Yeah, and I really love that they're doing sort of the classic hero take.
And I also like during the sort of final confrontation with Peekaboo, he was doing very superhero-y stuff with his speed.
Yeah.
Their effects are really very up to it, I think.
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
A surprisingly awesome
episode.
If they
can pull off Grodd, they can pull off a lot.
Yep, Grodd looked badass.
So, we are all very much still very thumbs up on the Flash.
And planning to watch the next episode tonight.
I can't wait for tonight.
Yep.
All right, that about wraps it up for us this week. We'll be back next week with a new episode, our 49th.
Yep, counting down.
And until next time,
Yo Joe!
And that'll wrap it up for us this week. As always, you can drop us email with topic suggestions, things you want us to hear about, or just comments on the podcast at roguesgallerytx@gmail.com. Follow us on Twitter at roguesgallery. Check us out on Facebook. Check out our website at www.roguesgallerytx.com. Check us out on Instagram at roguesgallerytx. And if you want to help us out, go over to iTunes and give us a 5-star rating and a little review. We'd very much appreciate it. And we will be back next week.
You worry, we're all flown on.
All right,
flown on.